tracks around Australia. Here's Inside Motorsport.
Hello, I'm Craig Revell.
Hi, I'm Colin Ford.
I'm Peter Norton, and thanks for joining us again this week on Inside Motorsport.
Plenty to talk about this week on the show.
And of course the big news was the announcement from Craig Lowndes, Fred Gibson and the Ford Motor Company that they'd be teaming up to attack the V8 supercars in 2001 and for the next 5 years. Earlier today, Craig Revell caught up with Craig Lowndes, where he said that he was thrilled to see him in a Ford.
Thank you very much. I got to say that with the decision I'm very happy, but it may upset a few of the old Holden fans, so you know, we'll just see how the year pans out, and so hopefully that people will understand the decision that we've been able to make.
This year, the off-season only seemed to last for a couple of hours between the Race of 1,000 Years in Adelaide and the start of the Paris-Dakar Rally in Paris. The Paris-Dakar Rally, of course, runs for 21 days and 10,739 kilometres across Europe and North Africa. And as of Saturday, Jean-Louis Slatter of France was on target for a third straight victory when he won Saturday's special stage on the sixth day of the rally.
Well, we've just seen sports cars in Australia, and the sports cars will be heading once again down to Daytona. Not the American Le Mans series, though, a new series, which is organised by the International Speedway Corporation. They are, of course, the body that also owns NASCAR, so it should be no surprise when I say three NASCAR Winston Cup stars have signed to contest in this year's Rolex 24 Hour at Daytona, as Kyle Petty has announced a deal with a Porsche GT3R Team Orbit and will join Corvette racers Dale Earnhardt and Dale Earnhardt Jr. on the starting grid for the race held on February the 3rd through to the 4th. Petty will share his Porsche with Leo Hendry and Gianni Louis Bugnoni and Peter Barron. It will fittingly carry the 43 number, which was made famous by, of course, his father, Richard Petty.
And Tasmanian driver Owen Kelly will be returning to the BAC Gas's Australian Super Touring Championship at their next round at Wakefield Park near Goulburn on the 20th of January, when he will drive a Thermo King sponsored BMW 320i. He'll also race the car at the championship finale at Sydney's Oran Park on February 11. He made his championship debut at the sixth round at Simmons Plains near Launceston on December 10 and finished second in both races behind Queenslander Paul Morris. Kelly said that his ex-BMW Motorsport rear-wheel drive car will continue to be prepared for the Wakefield Park and Oran Park rounds by Morris's Gold Coast-based Mount Cotton Estate winery team, as at Simmons Plains.
Well, of course, I'll go back to the United States, where Ari Leindike will overcome his addiction to the Indianapolis 500, how you ask, by coming out of retirement and hoping to make his third trip to the winner's circle at the, 81st running of the great event. The 47-year-old from the Netherlands insists his first hint that he was going to have to be more than just a spectator going at 230 miles per hour, well, it was last year in the commentary booth working on the television for the Indianapolis 500.
And again, as we're saying, it's so quick that the season begins, but already the Formula One cars will be back out on the track tomorrow, Monday, in Spain, for their first testing. Benetton and Williams will both be taking to the track at Jerez in southern Spain to test their Michelin tyres. This will be an opportunity for the two teams that have switched from the Bridgestone tyres to Michelin to run a full test. Benetton and Williams, who will be testing there, will also be welcoming back Giancarlo Fisichella. The Italian has been out of action since undergoing knee surgery on December 18, which caused him to miss the Esrel test before Christmas. So that means that essentially Mark Webber will be there doing some testing, but he won't be doing the full race testing, as Fisichella will be back in the car. I suppose Mark will walk up to him with a crowbar and hit him around the knees. But as it is, Fisichella said that his knee's getting better. It's not too bad, and he's already working in the gym. So by the first race of the season at Melbourne in March, he should be 100% fit. Williams will be fielding cars for Juan Pablo Montoya and Ralf Schumacher, which will be a FW22B chassis fitted with a 2000 specification BMW engine, while test driver Mark Jean will continue to use the new, smaller and lighter 2001 motor. McLaren and Ferrari won't be hitting the track until the middle of the month. McLaren is scheduled to run in Valencia on January 15, when Mika Hakkinen is scheduled to drive an F1 car for the first time since the season finale in Malaysia. They'll be using an updated version of last year's MP415 chassis, but fitted with an all-new Mercedes V10 engine. So testing, once again, it's underway already.
Finally, in our headline news, Brooke Tatnall narrowly defeated Max Dumsey and Skip Jackson to win the O'Brien Aluminium Nationals at Parramatta Cities Raceway. The trio of triple World Series sprint car champions outclassed a stellar field of local, national and international drivers in a 39-car field. Tatnall's Shell Helix My Car Sid Chrome Avenger opened an early lead over fastest qualifier and Hoosier Dash winner Gary Rush, and was never headed from there as he took victory in round number 10 of the World Series Sprint Cars. We spoke to him a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I don't like to be behind, I can tell you that. But, no, we had a good night. Things sort of rolled along our way. I think we were second quick time and had a heat win and a fourth in the heat. Max had a little bad luck with a crash in, I think, his first heat race. So things fell our way a little bit, but it hasn't always been our way, and it hasn't been anything other than the hard work that's got us there. We broke a camshaft at Horsham, and one DNF took us from a 800-point lead to a deficit of about, we've pegged it back now to 300, so it's just one of those things, but we'll just keep plugging away.
This part of the tour that you're about to do, the Queensland Swing, would be somewhat to your liking, whereas you seem to do a bit better up there than down in the lower parts, in the southern parts of Australia, where Max Dumsey is sort of a bit more experienced.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but Avalon had always been good to us, and, you know, Warrnambool's been good, and it's been terrible to us, but Archfield's definitely been a place that we've sort of done well at. I think we have, out of probably 16 races up there, I think we've won more than 50% of them up there, so last year was good. Usually if we come off with the win on the Wednesday night, we come off with the Saturday night win, so hopefully we can just keep that ball rolling. It'd be nice to definitely come away with from Queensland with two wins. If we can come away with two wins, it'll put us back in front of the championship no matter where Max finishes, but I don't want to wish any bad luck on anyone, but it'd be nice for him to have a DNF and just give us a little bit of a break in the points. But Archer has definitely been a good place to us. It's a short little bull ring, and bull rings have usually been pretty good to us.
Yeah. Last night it must have felt like you were back on the World of Outlaws series. 39 cars all vying for spots in the feature.
It was a tough field. I think the only difference is really when it comes down to qualifying. If you're 0.2 of a second off the pace in the Outlaws, that's basically 20 positions. But when it comes back to racing, all told, it's very, very tough. And I think it's not just I think World Series has been down on numbers this year, but the quality of field has been so tough.
Well, your plans, you're going back over to rejoin the Casey's General Stores team at the end of the World Series campaign, and of course the Australian title, which I know you're very serious about this year.
Yeah, the Australian title is definitely, it's the one race that's eluded us, and I don't know what we've got to do to try and win that one race, but we'll give it our best shot, same as we do every year. We never take chances going into it, but I don't know, sometimes we may take it a little too serious, maybe try a little too hard, and sometimes that bites us in the backside. But no, we've signed our deal to go back and race in America with the Casey's General Store team, so hopefully this year we've purchased a few motors, and hopefully our motor program will step up, so looking forward to it.
Well, Brooke, we wish you all the best for 2001, and certainly look forward to seeing some coverage of your racing over in the States.
Thanks, Greg. Yeah, hopefully this year the race fans can keep up with what we're doing over there, and television exposure now with TNN stepping up again. I think we've got 20 televised races this year, and I know with your radio program you've definitely given us a lot of coverage in the past, and hopefully we can continue to do that.
And that was Brooke Tatnall.
And for those of you who are looking for your regular fix of motorsport news on the newsagent's shelves, you may have noticed it's not there. Why is it not there? Well, talking to Motorsport News editor Phil Brannigan, they've held it back to take advantage of a bit of a time delay to get in the hot headlines about Craig Lowndes signing up with Fred Gibson and the Ford Motor Company to race a Ford Falcon in the 2001 Shell Championship Series. And of course, we'll have our coverage of that story a little bit later on.
After we take a break, you must stay tuned to Inside Motorsport because we've got a lot in the program, including crossing to Dave Langfield in Adelaide for a wrap-up of the Race of 1,000 Years. We've talked to Top Fuel Tony Galea about the Summer Nats, Tony Thornton about more drag racing, and John Evans for the World Series Sprint Cars.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
My son came home from school recently, quite upset. He's only in grade 2, but he heard an older kid in the playground say something about a will. Well, naturally, he asked the question, what's a will? You know what one of them said? It's when your parents die. Well, what do you say to that? Yes, it is. No, it's not. I mean, how do you explain to a kid about death? And more to the point, how do you explain that parents, like all people, die? And that some parents forget to make a will and don't get to have their say on exactly who gets what and who takes care of the kids and all that sort of stuff. It's a tough thing to tell a child. But, you know, I did my best and I reassured him that his mum and me did have a will. We got one of those Australian legal will kits that you order over the phone. Well, they're only $29.95 plus postage and handling.
To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down, 1-800-246-868. Call now, 1-800-246-868.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Ollie is an irrepressible 5-year-old triplet. What sets her apart is that she's blind, but that's never held her back. With the help of guide dog instructors, she's learned to touch, to feel, and to listen. By the time she was 3, she could walk using a cane. You can help train other blind and vision-impaired children by sending your donation today to the Guide Dogs, P.O. Box 107, Milsons Point, Sydney.
And down the road we go.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, no, it's Super B! Super B for Men is the super formula containing active bee pollen, Siberian ginseng, tribulus, and zinc. Super B is for vitality. If you're feeling anything but super, man, perhaps you should try Super B for Men. It won't make you fly,
but it may give you a buzz.
Try new Super B for Men from Abico Health. Call now and have 100 capsules delivered for only $39.95, plus postage and handling.
Good life and energy, good health, vitality. That's the way you want to be, Abico Health.
Here's how to order. Call this number now, 1-800-00-00-94.
Sponsors of Triple S.
The Churchill Trust is now calling for Australians from all walks of life to apply for the 2002 Churchill Fellowships. You could be going overseas in 2002 for about 4 to 10 weeks on a Churchill Fellowship that would cover fares, a living allowance and fees. No special qualifications are needed as merit of the project and the benefit to Australia are significant factors. Look up the Churchill Trust on www.churchilltrust.org.au or call the Trust on 1800 777 231. Applications close 28th of February 2001.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Looking overseas again, there's lots of things happening in preparation for this year's British Touring Car Championships. West Surrey Racing is in contention to run MG's British Touring Car Championship efforts, and that is running basically a Rover badged, a Rover 45 with an MG badge on it. As it was, West Surrey Racing was left high and dry when Honda pulled out at the end of the 2000 season, and as it was also, Ray Mallock Limited, which had won titles for Nissan in 98 and 99. They fell out of the Rover equation because they'd wanted to design and build the cars for Rover themselves. As it was, Rover wanted the race car to be constructed by race car constructor Lola. So West Surrey Racing, they're going to come into the frame and they'll be running. As it is, the drivers they had potentially lined up, that is David Leslie and Anthony Reid, are expected to remain in contention for the drive with the new team.
Colin Ford caught up with Dave Langfield just a few moments ago and started by asking him how was the crowd and the feeling at the Race of 1,000 Years.
Last Sunday evening there was about 65,000 race fans through in the new year in a manner never before seen in Adelaide as international motorsport returned to the famous Grand Prix circuit. Of course, that was the longer original Grand Prix circuit rather than the shortened version that we used for the Clipsal V8 supercar event. The crowds really responded to the different type of cars here. Most of them hadn't actually seen that type of car before, certainly not on the streets of Adelaide. You probably heard from my report last week, the noise levels, it was pretty hard to get the message across, and it was pretty much reminiscent of the old Formula One days, and the atmosphere was such that, you know, it did bring back memories of those good old days. The weather for the 3 days was a steady 30 to 31 degrees, and it was fairly humid and hot, quite a bit of cloud cover there, so not exactly ideal conditions, but certainly better than a certain Clipsal event we had earlier in the year where it rained. Not quite as big a field as we would have liked to have, but quality field all the same. The BMW prototypes were absent, but we did get three of the BMW E46 M3 GT races, which was good to see. Leading the field was the special one-off paint scheme, the Crocodile scheme, for the number 77 Alan McNish Audi, co-driven by Dindo Capello. Also present were the three panels cars, one of them being the new lower bodywork car with a smaller four-litre motor driven by Magnussen Graf. Other prototypes present were the two damned Cadillacs, Raffinelli and Conrad Lollers, the Conrad machine being co-driven by a local V8 supercar driver, Alan Haith, managed to stitch together a deal in the last couple of days. They actually almost ended their chances on the Friday afternoon by having a bit of a crash that the team were repairing that car until about 3 a.m. on Saturday morning, so I'm sterling effort there to get it back into the event. GTS cars a bit thin on the ground, only two Arika Vipers, one Chamberlain Viper, and a single Porsche 911 GT2. The rest of the field was made up of the bulk of obviously the three BMW M3s, but a large number of GT3 911 Porsches. McNish only needed to complete 25 laps to become the ALMS Series champion, but as we said last week, received a big setback early on the weekend, when he, following a photo shoot, where he was dressed in traditional Scottish kilt. When removing that kilt, he aggravated an earlier back injury that he apparently got during the week lifting a suitcase, of all things, which led to Saturday afternoon Audi Sport Australia's Brad Jones being drafted into the team. And Jones put up a good performance, managing to lap in about 1 minute 31 he got down to, which was only about 8 seconds off the pole time. Further setback to Manish was when Dindo Capello crashed on the last lap of the Sunday morning warm-up, only 3 hours prior to the race, when the left front wheel actually parted company with his car on the banana bend just before the famous Stag Corner. That saw a frantic repair job by the crew to get the car back into starting from pole position. Hard luck story of the weekend was the Pilbeam Nissan Project 2000 entry, headed up by driver Jim Cornish and sometime Australian super touring entrant Jamie Wall. This is a prototype LMP675 car, which was being attempted to be converted from FIA to ALMS specifications. And the officials just didn't like it. Every time they went to scrutineering, the car was rejected, and unfortunately the guys didn't even manage to take to the track all weekend, so bitter disappointment for them, and they were very chockered off, and that's putting it politely. Sunday afternoon at 4:15 saw 25 cars take the start for a rolling start, with Audi's Frank Bieler winning the start from pole sitter McNish. Minutes later, the Magnussen Panos went out of the race with a broken alternator, so very disappointing for the new car there. McNish retook the lead on lap 17 and then sealed the championship by completing lap 25. Interesting to watch the Audis from their pit wall. They've got these whiz-bang score lap boards that are actually bolted to the wall, and they're an electronic LED set up whereby they've got like lap 25, P1, etc., and it swings out automatically, or as the crew swings out to the drivers, which is quite handy for the night racing. So it was very easy for us to keep track of what was going on as well, since they were outside of our garage. 3 hours into the race, Pirro in the number 78 Audi crashed out, and just after 7:30, which is about half an hour later, Greg Murphy crashed the number 12 Panos, which is the All-Australian entry, Murphy, Jason Bright and David Bradman, and he limped back to the pits for some lengthy repairs. Almost an hour after crashing, the Pirro Audi limped back to the Audi pits for repairs to broken front and rear suspension. And this is probably what led to Brad Jones not actually getting a drive in the car, as he actually took the warm-up laps on Sunday lunchtime, but then didn't actually get into the actual race car, and unfortunately missed out on sharing in the spoils of McNish's victory. Audi obviously pinning their hopes on that car and not wanting to risk Jones during the night stages. There's only one safety car period in the whole race, as Jason Bright crashed the panels again with just under an hour to go. Unfortunately, I think the car actually ran out of brakes there, and again limped back to the pits for the panels team to have a lot of work that evening with repair jobs. So Manish took the win at 10 o'clock, covering 225 laps, or approximately 851 kilometres, leading by a massive 21 laps over the Conrad Lola. Third place outright and GTS winner was the Olivia Beretta, Carl Wendlinger, Dominic Dupay Viper. and teammates in the second Viper, Nyama and Jean-Philippe Belloc, coming in fourth place. And fifth outright and GT winner was the Porsche 911 GT3 of Lucas Luhr and Dirk Müller. Both Cadillacs retired early in the race, or the first half of the race, with steering and engine problems, and the Brabham Bright Murphy Australia entry ending up ninth.
It's not the sort of result that they were possibly hoping for from those particular drivers.
No, unfortunately, because with the attrition, they were moving the way steadily up the field. It would have been good for an Australian result there, but really speaking, in the overall scheme of things, Australians did very well in the event. Obviously, they managed to come, I think they ended up being third in the prototype class, as it was anyway. With, obviously, Alan Heath coming in second place outright, and a number of, them themselves in the panels. Panels actually quite impressed with the running of the Australian event. And there's talk, actually, that he's going to be running or looking at setting up a factory here to produce the Panos road cars, the special hand-built supercars, with anything up to, depending on the production levels, anything up to 40 to 60 jobs being created. So he's looking at a site there in Adelaide to do that. So that's a further spin-off benefit of having this type of racing in the city here.
And it's actually interesting also to note that within Australian drivers, there was also Ray Lintott, who had done himself a deal. He was driving in and one of the Chamberlain Viper GTS, who finished eighth.
That's right. They were eighth and third, obviously, in the GTS class. The only GTS winners, obviously, finishers out of the four there were the Vipers. Obviously, the car to have in that class. We didn't see the Corvettes come over here, unfortunately, so that was sad to see. But the only other entrant in that event, in that class, was a 911 GT2 Porsche Turbo, which had very serious suspension problems early on in the race, and even after some repairs, didn't manage to get much of a go after that and retired.
The interesting part is that during the week we've heard announcements that in terms of the American Le Mans series, that they're looking at running two races in Australia next year, one apparently over in Perth next year, which will be a demonstration race, whatever a demonstration race is, and then the Adelaide race being the grand finale of the Asian series, the European and the American Le Mans series all combined, which means that all the top teams must compete at the final race to, it doesn't matter what points they're on, they must compete in the final race to secure their championship, which means that things are going to actually definitely be much better for Adelaide, and of course it means you're going to get a full capacity grid for the event for all classes.
Well, to be honest, I don't know where they're going to put all of them. It's a massive exercise, and obviously those teams would want to be getting some sort of budgetary, perhaps assistance, maybe even from the organisers to get those cars down here, because it's a fairly long haul. But of course, with the Asia Pacific series, a lot of cars will be in the region to start with. Obviously, during the week, or hot on the heels of the race, successful running of the race, there was a proposal put out in the paper about an upgrade to the track, because at the moment it's in Victoria Park Racecourse, which is actually a horse racing facility, and the pit garages have to be dismantled and put up every year on a big concrete slab, and what they're looking at doing is changing the track to run in front of the Victoria Park Heritage Grandstand. They'll see an upgrade to their grandstand, which is sort of in line with what's at Sandown for their horse racing circuit there, which sort of incorporates the car race as well, with some permanent pit facilities, so they're not taking them down. And apparently the cost of putting up and taking those garages down every year runs into several million dollars, so the cost of doing that will obviously be offset. They're looking at a proposal of something like $24 million for the upgrade of the facilities. The horse racing people apparently are keen, the South Australian Jockey Club are keen, because it'll supposedly get them an upgrade to the grandstand. So I think it seems to be a win-win situation for everyone, and we'll see a change for the first time international-wise to the Adelaide Grand Prix circuit, or the Adelaide Formula 1 now ALMS circuit.
If they are looking at down the track, even running, as has been mooted at some stages, an Asia Pacific Grand Prix the circuit other than Melbourne, then Adelaide would probably stand itself in good stead.
Well, this would be a world-class area, and I think they're also looking at some sort of other functions, the three-day horse event that we have here as well. I think they're looking at some sort of incorporation there as well. So the whole thing's got spin-offs to other types of events that would all benefit from that greatly, and of course it adds to the tourism and bringing dollars into the Australians, the Adelaide economy.
Mm. Well, David, thanks very much for your report on the American Le Mans Series race of 1,000 years down there in Adelaide, and we'll catch up again, no doubt, in a future issue of Inside Motorsport.
Good on you. Thanks, Colin.
Colin Ford speaking with David Langfield in Adelaide.
And Alan McNish, of course, has finally clinched that American Le Mans Series with his drive at the race of 1,000 years down in Adelaide. He'll actually be spending this coming year, 2001, testing Toyota's new Formula One entry, doing all the heavy testing work before they re-enter Formula One in 2002. And of course, McNish hopes that that testing activity that he'll be doing for Toyota will lead to a permanent Formula One drive.
And still to come on Inside Motorsport is that interview with Craig Lowndes, but after the break, we'll catch up with drag racing developments with Andra President Tony Thornton.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
Now, some mongrel nearly ploughed straight into me on the road recently. Absolutely scared the you-know-what out of me. I mean, I've had near misses before, but this one was close. And you can bet your bottom dollar won't be the last time either. Now, let's face it, they're not getting any better out there, are they? I'm sorry, but it just makes me so angry. I mean, the wife was in the car too, so imagine if the worst had happened. Imagine if we'd both been killed. Who'd take care of the kids? I mean, we haven't even made a will. I can't believe we haven't done that. Look, excuse me for a sec. I'm going to have to make a phone call and get one of those Australian legal will kits delivered. I should have done this ages ago. They're only $29.95 plus postage and handling.
To order, call National Direct now on 1-800-246-868. Write the number down, 1-800-246-868. Call now, 1-800-246-868.
Sponsors of Triple S. The Churchill Trust is now calling for Australians from all walks of life to apply for the 2002 Churchill Fellowships. You could be going overseas in 2002 for about 4 to 10 weeks on a Churchill Fellowship that would cover fares, a living allowance and fees. No special qualifications are needed as merit of the project and the benefit to Australia are significant factors. Look up the Churchill Trust on www.churchilltrust.org.au or call the Trust on 1800 777 231. Applications closed 28th of February 2001.
Hello everyone, H.G. Nelson here. Roy, I'm an amnesty freak. What do you like about amnesty?
Well, I like amnesty, actually, but I like Amnesty International in particular because I regard them as the global defender of human rights in the world.
Is that right, Roy? That's right.
Now, Australians, H.G., can participate in Amnesty International's defence of the tortured. Let's get rid of torture. And to find out, you call 1-300-300-920. Help out with amnesty. 1-300-300-920.
Phone now.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
And welcome back to Inside Motorsport. And now Craig Revell will be chatting with Andra President Tony Thornton.
And Tony, welcome back to Inside Motorsport, and Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you, Craig.
It's been, quite an interesting entry into 2001. On the second last day of 2000, we saw 301 miles per hour broken here in Australia. And just before that, of course, over in Western Australia, the brand new Kawani Motorplex opened to great fanfare on the speedway side. And I know you were enjoying the drag racing there as well.
Yeah, it was certainly a big finish to 2000. And given some of the other things that are happening in drag racing at the moment, the results in Perth and Willowbank were most encouraging.
At the moment, you're in Melbourne, about to have discussions with Calder Park, and obviously Calder Park and Adelaide International are big parts of the Australian national scene.
Well, at the moment, given the situation in Sydney, the two healthiest tracks in the country are about as far apart as you can get in Australia, in Perth and Brisbane. The news of late December, or the week before Christmas, I think it was, it certainly wasn't a good Christmas present for anyone in drag racing. Most of the issues we've been discussing at length for some months, the issue of liability and some insurance areas, and certainly the cost of running events. It's fair to say that the cost of staging drag racing events or any of those sorts of events at all in Calder and Adelaide need to produce a better result than they do anywhere else. But both tracks are run on a commercial basis, and they need to have a healthy bottom line. Willowbank is a not-for-profit organisation, and Kwinana has just had a serious injection of funds from the Western Australian government, and while they will be looking to operate at a surplus, they certainly don't have the financial pressures on them of Melbourne and Adelaide.
Yeah, it's never been so strong in Australia, has it? Drag racing has never had so many commercial sponsors and never had the results that we're getting in speed and ET-wise, but unfortunately we're starting to get big chunks in the national series.
Well, it's about more than good results on the track, Craig, and while that doesn't diminish the feats of the people who have achieved those or the results that have been
provided in Perth recently and Willowbank over a period of years. We're all operating in a tough commercial world, and business is finding new challenges everywhere all the time, and drag racing facilities are no different. So certainly there is some great encouragement for us to look hard at the way the sport is presented, the way it operates. We still believe it's one of the best spectacles in motorsport, and certainly there are loyal hordes of fans in all of the major cities and some big regional centres, but like everything else, we really need to continue working hard to present it in a way that the racers can afford to keep racing and the fans can keep affording to come and watch.
Well, I know my favourite class, the Pro Stocks, also had a fantastic run up there last week.
Yeah, the Pro Stock bracket was outstanding, and Peter Ridgeway, after stumbling a little bit at the start of this year's series, came back with a vengeance. Low ET top speed and a finals win and top qualifier, and that's about as well as you can do it at any event.
And also with Gary Phillips and of course now Pommy Steve Reed moving up to Top Fuel, it does just show where the quality is all sort of coming to the top. Jim Reed breaking that long-standing barrier that did seem to block us. Have you had any feedback from the Americans? Because Jim Reed's run last week was the first outside North America for a Top Fuel dragster to go over 300 miles an hour.
Yeah, certainly the mark was set in Florida some 8 years ago. And since then, that speed has been reached and exceeded in many states in America, certainly at all of the major tracks, also in a couple of spots in Canada, so the Americans are quite careful to say it's the United States. Or no, sorry, it's North America, not the United States. And it was almost a bit of a surprise last weekend, because Jim had a fairly bad day, even he will agree with that, up until that point. A couple of aborted runs, one where he lost traction, and then, quite frankly, they hadn't put a decent pass down all day, but they certainly made up for it at the end. That's all right. I was just going to say that while you and I might be quite conversant with the 300-mile-an-hour term, we should point out that that is just over 480 kilometres per hour for people who think at the current level. Certainly, the 500 kilometre an hour mark has been passed in America as well, but they don't talk in kilometres, and because drag racing is an American sport like baseball, we talk in feet and miles per hour and pounds and everything else, because it enables us to give a direct comparison. So 300 was an important milestone for us, as it was for the Americans, and of all the people in drag racing to take that mark, I think Jim deserved it. Yeah. He's been one who's always set the new marks in drag racing, past all the milestones. I remember being at Castlereagh when he ran the first 5-second pass, and I was honoured to be at Willowbank when he ran the 300.
And of course, this year we did see an influx of new rules into all the divisions, and for drag racers listening to the program, you are calling for rule committee suggestions to be coming in over the period of the next month.
Yeah, our National Council meets in mid-February to have a look at all the submissions and review the rules as a group. And then once we've considered what we think is necessary, and also any good ideas that come from anywhere, it's not limited to members of ANDRA, I should say. Anyone at all who's ever been to the drags or even watched on television, if they think they might be able to contribute with a great idea, we'd be happy to have it. And they can send them to the ANDRA office in Adelaide by January 31st, and we'll have a look.
Well, Tony, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and I look forward to hopefully seeing and hearing more about the drag racing series right across Australia over the course of the remainder of the drag racing season down here.
About March, as the warmer months passes by. It continues in Queensland all year, of course. But certainly we're not looking at it as a period of doom and gloom. We do have some dramas at the moment, but as with a positive outlook on anything, they create some great opportunities, and we have a few of those at the moment. So over the next few weeks, there should be a lot of good news coming out of drag racing, and you'll be one of the first to hear about it, Craig.
It's actually very interesting to note that the gentleman who broke the 300 mile per hour time frame there for drag racing in Australia, when he was interviewed at the Summonats, did make a quite pointed reference about the fact of the fate of the drag strip in Canberra, and said he hoped that the local government here in the ACT would, as they say, extract the digit and provide a venue for the young guys to show off their cars in a performance way other than up and down the back streets of Canberra. And given what's happened over the last couple of days, I think that's probably something worthwhile.
Certainly is still to come on Inside Motorsport. We speak with Craig Lowndes. After the break, though, we'll have John Evans and the World Series Sprint Car News.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
So your marriage is over. I'm sorry to hear about that. I guess it's been a pretty tough time for you lately. What's going to happen next? Are you filing for divorce? Can you keep it semi-civil and make a joint application? Have you thought about getting a solicitor, or did you want to keep the costs down and do it yourself? There are so many questions, aren't there? My advice? Get an Aussie Legal Divorce Kit. Aussie Legal is Australia's online information and law firm referral service. Whether you're planning to apply to the family court on your own or seek the assistance of a lawyer, the information and checklist in the Aussie Legal Divorce Kit is invaluable, and it's written in everyday language by experienced lawyers. Call now. The Aussie Legal Divorce Kit is only $49.95 plus postage and handling, and includes an internet download of any other Aussie Legal family law kit. Here's how to order. Call this number now, 1-800-00-1194. Write the number down, 1-800-00-1194. Call now, 1-800-00-1194.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Hello everyone, H.G. Nelson here, and I'm an amnesty freak. Roy, what is amnesty?
Amnesty International, H.G., tremendous people. I would regard them as the global defender of human rights. And they're having this campaign, H.G., an international campaign that's called Take a Step to Stamp Out Torture.
Beauty.
Yes, and Australians can get involved. We can all get involved, H.G.
How?
By calling 1-300-300-920. Amnesty International, think torture, think of getting rid of it. 1-300-300-920.
Hi.
Good morning.
I need a clock that has more time.
More time?
My dad says he wishes he had more time with me.
Oh, well, maybe if he brought his watch in, I could squeeze just a few extra moments between, say, 3 and 5.
And we could put the 3 where the 11 is so I could get out of school sooner.
Will that be all?
I think so.
No, it'd be no trouble to bag up some minutes.
Family.
Well, didn't you ever hear your dad say, when I've got a few minutes?
Yeah.
Isn't it about time?
Well, now you can give him some.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
The World Series Sprint Cars were at Parramatta City Raceway last night, and, well, Brooke Tatnall has got the, moral advantage as they head towards Queensland, getting through the final stages of the World Series Sprint Cars. And John Evans joins us on the line. John, a very exciting night's racing at PCR last night.
It was. Unfortunately, Friday night's first night of the O'Brien Aluminium Nationals was washed out by a 25-minute storm, which was pretty ferocious, but that was matched on the racetrack last night in intensity between Brooke Tatnall, Max Dumsey and Skip Jackson, all the Triple World Series champions showing their superiority over the 39-car field last night.
For Gary Rush Jr., though, it looked like he was going to be a fly in the ointment, getting the Oval Express quick time at the beginning.
Gary Rush performed brilliantly in the 2UE Pick and Payless Maxim. He set fast time and also beat Brooke in the dash. So that was an excellent front row start for him from pole, and he ultimately finished fourth. A really good performance from young Gary.
Well, as you said, the trio of triple champions have taken everyone before them, and it has been a spectacular run for who's going to be the first four-time winner.
Yeah, so one stage there we had three consecutive races where the lead and the championship swapped with each winner, and currently Max is a couple hundred points ahead of Brooke, and Brooke traditionally goes well up in Queensland, while Max has got the wood on him at Parramatta. So coming down to the grand final and the 20th, it will be a really exciting shootout between the two, I would think.
Now, for Max Dumpsy fans, it wasn't as if it was a cruising second place. He had to come back from flipping in one of the heat races when he caught up with Stephen Graham.
Yes, unfortunately, he ended up out of the dash for the first time this season as a result of that collision with Stephen Graham in the heat race. And starting from position 7, he was the one that was really on the move, really catching Brooke towards the end as Tatnall started to encounter a slowly deflating right rear tyre. So it was looming as a really exciting finish. It was probably only about 5 or 6 car lengths in it at the end.
But Dumpsy and Brooke Tatnall now both with 4 wins. The only person who's managed to get an A feature so far this year outside of those two drivers is, of course, Robbie Farr.
Yes, Robbie had engine trouble last night, overheating and a subsequent loss of power, sort of limited his run, but he's shortly to debut his brand new Avenger with a new motor, so I expect he'd be pretty potent at the grand final, then the Grand Annual Spincar Classic, and of course the 50,000 to win. Goff and Gilmore cap 50,000 at Parramatta.
Well, and that was John Evans bringing us up to date on the World Series Sprint Cars, and of course Oval Express, the fantastic Speedway magazine, is in the newsstands now.
And Australian Championship Subaru stars Possum Bourne and Cody Crocker will contest the Asia Pacific Rally Championship next year, as well as another attack on the Australian series. Possum Bourne is hoping to obtain a new shape Impreza World Rally car during the year, while Cody Crocker will use a Group N example after it's homologated in March. Bourne said, "We've just got a new old shape Impreza, and we'll continue to use that until we're sure that the newer car is more competitive." In other rally news, the word is that Colin McRae wants to start his own junior team and is looking for manufacturer support to get that team up and running. He sees there's something to put something back into the sport, particularly for young rally drivers in the UK, and also something for you to do when he gets around to stopping rallying at the top elite level. I suppose it's one of those things, you know, I'd love to have a way of planning something to do when I retire like that. And also in related news, the former British Rally Championship has been driving a Ford Focus, which is Tapio Lakkinen. He's moving from Ford to a Toyota Corolla in the World Rally Championship for 2001, commencing with the Swedish Rally. He's done a deal with Toyota Team Sweden to drive the car as he attempts to prove his worth to World Rally Championship manufacturers and gain more experience of four-wheel drive and turbocharging.
Top Fuel Tony Galea joins us in the studio now, and you've spent another long weekend out there at the Summernats. How was Summernats 2001?
Very, very good, Craig. Yet again, another record amount of entries, record amount of crowd coming in, 1,800 entries. Quality of the cars, yet again, have improved.
This year, of course, we had the perennial favourites with the burnouts, competitions, the sound off, and of course just the overall judging specialised category of the Dynamax Challenge.
Yes, with the Dyno Dynamics here, where we had some very, very high horsepower figures. Like I spoke to you last Sunday night evening, I thought 600 horsepower would be it's going to get it. This year, we had a car, Chicolato, the Alpha body style car, which was 16 of them made. Well, it belonged to a gentleman by the name of Todd Wilf. Well, Todd last year rocked up in a VS Commodore Ute. Now, the engine out of the Commodore VS Ute, which won it last year, which was a twin-turbo Holden V8, well, that went into the Chicolato. On qualifying, on the Saturday, or on the Friday afternoon, it pumped out 850 horsepower. Now, that's really, really stout figures. And then today, he took it out again, and it was 722 horsepower. He had a few problems with the wastegate. Now, with this category, where they've got superchargers and turbochargers, they've got to run on a ruling. They can only run 15 PSI bar. And that's all. If they go over, they're disqualified. They get 3 runs on the dyno. Now, Todd Wilkes in the Chicolato, he came out with a 722 horsepower. Then you had a VR Ute, a Rob Vickery, which was a supercharged Holden V8. Now, they're 665 horsepower. Now, there was another favourite, Jason Gray. Now, Jason won the initial, one of the very first initial Dynamax horsepower heroes. And this year he came in an old car, 491 horsepower. He couldn't muster up the horsepower, what he was thinking. He was hoping to get 500 horsepower, but he had problems with, like, it was going over the required maximum boost that they were allowing you. And unfortunately he came in, but a lot of little things, like actually one car that I know fairly well, which is a local car built owned by a gentleman by the name of Steve Jeremenko. Now, the engine was built by Graham Silk, one of our respected engine builders in town. It's a 454 aluminium big block Chev. It's in a WB ute, and it's a naturally aspirated ute. Now, on the Friday when he qualified, he did a 513, and today, probably with the hot climate, he did a 582, but he ended up taking out the naturally aspirated class.
And of course, it's not just a class for the V8s, although the V8s do dominate, and a lot of people love to see the old rotisserie ovens out there.
Oh, you betcha, Craig. They had rotaries, you had Geminis. I mean, the thing we'll go with just quickly with some figures. There was a Gemini, you know, it had a lot, I think it was just a naturally aspirated Gemini with probably EFI, probably something, you know, the engine's been imported. Now, the young guy took off 322 horsepower out of a Gemini, of all things. And then one that really caught my eye was a local car. It's now in the hands of a new owner, but it's been tuned by the same guy who helped set it up, a gentleman by Lee Steele. It's a Mazda 808, and it's just it's like a real sleeper. It's got the stock hubcaps on it, and it's red, and it's got the Venetian blinds. It's got one of those 20B rotaries. Now, it pumped out, would you believe, 493 horsepower. Now, out of the factory, they're lucky to come out 250 horsepower. They flip the twin turbos off, they put on a huge 304 Garrett turbocharger, which probably gives it more boost, and on the couple of passes it was really constant. Now, he came in on Friday for the qualifying at 336 now, and there was a lot of gains, so they must have tweaked around with the computer and the laptop, and they end up managing to get 493, and he ended up taking out the supercharge yet again, bar on a 15 PSI rule. Now, if you went over that rule, you were out and you were disqualified. Like I said, you get three goes at it, and if you stay within below that 15 PSI, well, you're in, and if you take it out.
So everyone who is travelling home from the Summonats, please drive safely. We have already lost far too many people on the roads over this Christmas New Year period. Top Fuel Tony, turning our attention to the Canberra Drag Racing Club. Any good news on the horizon there?
No, unfortunately, Craig. I mean, like I said to you last week, I've heard nothing on the grapevine of what's going on at the moment. Unfortunately, it's just one of those things that we've got to sort of like hold our breath and sort of see what's going to happen. I think it's just a matter of holding our fingers and see. I mean, hopefully we might get some good news and all that with him. But actually, speaking to Jim Reed today, he said that there's something coming out of Sydney at the moment. I think then we might be possibly seeing a drag strip getting built with the Jim Reed and David Cook thing. So hopefully... thing, but when I went up to Willowbank on the weekend, talked to a few of the people I knew from when they used to race regularly in Canberra, Bob James possibly looking at closing down Adelaide and closing Calder, but he wants to keep Calder open for the Nationals, and I don't know what's going to happen after that. Mm. Fortunately, poor old drag racing feel like taking a bit of a beating at the moment.
And unbelievably so, with sponsors and competitors at record highs. But, Toppy, it's been a pleasure to catch up with you over the next couple of weeks, and we do wish everyone out there in the Canberra Drag Racing fraternity the very happiest of New Year's.
Thank you, Craig.
That was Craig Revell talking with Tony Galea.
And Craig Revell, of course, caught up with Craig Lowndes earlier in the week, and one of the questions he asked him was the question relating to the fact that the Ford fans had to put up with Jason Bright making the move to the Holden Racing Team and possibly switching their allegiances there, but how would it go for Craig Lowndes with his Holden fans having to possibly make the move over to Ford?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure what Jason's situation was, but, you know, I'm happy for him. I hope he gets what he wants out of HRT, and I hope he has all the success in the world. Near management agreement with Tom, which we terminated the early last year, which by the letter that we received yesterday, I obviously haven't accepted that because they're wanting to now contest that management, so we'll just see where that takes us. But, you know, we've never wanted to go to court with all that. We just wanted to get it all resolved and get on with motor racing.
Mm. Well, for yourself now, Gibson Motorsport is no stranger to success, and I would imagine that was one of the reasons seeing Fred Gibson getting re-involved again was a part of your decision?
Well, Fred actually brought back the team prior to talking to me, so really Fred's decision to get back into the motorsport must have been his own. He'd been sitting out for 12 months and must have got the bug to get back into it, but really I'm looking forward to working with Fred. Fred's a different person to work for. His values in life are very similar to what I am, and you know, he's got great family morals, and I said he's a different person, so I'm really looking forward to working with a new team, new personnel and a new car.
Now Kmart's coming online, and I know Kmart did get a bit of a heads up because already in Kmart stores nationally now is a signature series of clothing.
Well, it's something that's obviously, they've had a strong relationship with the team, and we'd love them to continue that on. So I believe Fred's talking to them now, and hopefully that they can convince them to stay with the team and really continue that sponsorship on.
Have you driven a Ford race car like previous to us talking or to the deal being signed?
No, I haven't. I still haven't. It's something that we're actually waiting on a vehicle to be coming, and really then once we get the car, we can get stuck into testing, because obviously that's going to be very important for us to do some testing and really as much as we can before the first round. But I got to say that we're very lucky this year that we got our first race is the Melbourne Grand Prix, which is not a non-championship race, so it really gives us a chance to, in race conditions, iron out the bugs.
How hard has it been for you and Natalie to go through this limbo period that you've had to endure?
Well, I guess it's been a long time. We've really had to struggle through some areas, but really we're able to get through it now. The decision to go to Ford wasn't an easy one. Obviously, my whole background, everyone knows me as a Holden driver, but really when you sit down with Jeff Pilates and Ford, their aim now and their goal is for the next future of, or 5 years of the future of Ford, is very similar to what I want to achieve. So really I'm very excited. It's given me a new enthusiastic outlook on motorsport and looking forward to it.
What are you going to be doing in this period now from signing the contract and the announcement this week to the first time you get into the car? How have you moved back to Melbourne to work with the team on setting up the car?
Not at the moment. We're still living in Queensland. We'll go home now. We're actually at home, and we'll have probably almost a week off, hopefully, because really up until this decision was made, we've been on the go, and really it's now up to Fred to get the workshop up and running. Obviously, they've got to turn it around from a Holden team to a Ford, so that's going to take a bit of time. But once that's all happened, I'll be spending a bit of time, or a lot more time this year in Melbourne, getting it all worked out.
And how much do you think of the HRT experience can you transfer over, considering that it's not going to be Holden's anymore?
Well, hopefully we've got something to give to both Ford and to Fred. Obviously, you love to contribute something there. Know my experience in the last 6 years. I understand the industry now a lot better. Understand now what goes on behind the scenes, and really I'd love to be able to help a young person come through the sport and really give them the opportunity like they did me, and really give someone else a kickstart in the motor racing life.
For yourself, teammate wise, I heard rumours that it was Rodney Ford.
No, we haven't got any teammates at the moment. That's something else that we need to obviously work out pretty quickly, because come the long distance, we need to get something organised there, because the longer the year goes on, obviously the drivers get secured into teams, and really we've got to just now work out who we want is best for the team to work with us in the long distance.
I know you were saying about taking on a young driver, but if the experience of, say, the CAT team that tried to do it with one car is anything to go by, could we see an established driver, a Jim Richards perhaps, in the car to give you two lots of very experienced feedback, and then maybe a younger driver coming in with the goal on a long-term plan?
Well, yeah, it's something I guess we'll just have to look at. That's something that Fred will have to, and myself will sit down and work out, because really at the moment it's just a matter of now getting a car up and running, and the rest of it hopefully will fall into place as the year goes on. But that is a possibility for sure.
Were you amazed? I know we speak to Phil Branigan quite regularly, and I think in the last 6 issues of Motorsport News, you graced the cover on 5. Were you sort of amazed of how much of a life this whole thing took about where Craig Lowndes was going?
Well, I was. I'm very surprised, and I guess I'm overwhelmed at the interest level that that's been generated out of just me making it for us a decision that's right for us. It's been amazing, really, the support we've had from fans as well. It's been great to see that. Really, the motor racing, hopefully it will grow in the next 5 years, because really the last 5 years it's grown enormously. So, it's just amazing the people that take note and follow the sport.
For the future of V8 supercars, do you think things like a Ford man going to Holden, a Holden man going to Ford, is actually good for the series in as much as you made the back page of the Daily Telegraph on Friday.
Okay, I was not sure of that one. It'll be great, obviously, for the sport. The thing that we have in the sport, we've only got two manufacturers, so I guess it is difficult if situations change, drivers change, and they want to change manufacturers. We've only got two to choose from, my life now is with Ford, and now I've got a 5-year agreement with them, and really looking forward to growing very closely with them over the future.
Mm. Now, will we see yourself in Ford company advertising as well, or as you used to do for Holden?
Well, hopefully that side of it we can continue with Ford. Yes, it's something that I'd love to get a lot closer to the Ford Motor Company in all aspects of motor racing, the road cars and the advertising. So that's something that I'd love to be more involved and probably try and get a closer relationship than what I had.
Mm. Have you had much dealings with Howard Marsden?
Howard and Jeff Pilates have been very good. I guess I have to say that they're very approachable. Whenever I need to speak to them directly, I was able to do that.
Mm. Well, Craig, as I said at the top, being a Ford man myself, I'm quite happy to see you driving for that, but I think the other half of our listening audience might be burning flags.
Well, I hope not. I guess at the end of the day, as I said, I hope they understand the decision. I'm still the same person that I was before this whole saga has gone on, and now I'm going to be out there this year driving as fast and as hard as I ever been and going out there and talking and signing autographs as much as I ever have. So I'm still looking forward to getting out there as well.
That was Craig Revell talking with Craig Lowndes, and yes, it's been a huge story. It's dragged on for many, many months, and as a Ford fan myself, it's pretty exciting to see him head that way towards the light side of the championship. Colin, what are your thoughts on the move?
Well, I think it's just one of those things that probably it's been on the cards for some time that Ford has been out there looking for a top name driver to add to their stable. And as it was, Craig Lowndes was not happy with the way he's being treated by Holden. So where else was he going to go? I think if you look at it, a lot of the problem that Craig had was with a lot of the very senior Holden management, and it didn't matter where he go, that somebody had to pull something out of the bag to provide him with a very, very good deal and package, and to guarantee also that he's going to get a good deal out of Holden's to provide him with a competitive car and backup. He may not have got that if he'd stayed with Holden.
One thing that will be interesting is how this all impacts on the other Ford teams that are out there. I guess they're feeling a little unloved that all of the attention and perhaps some of their budgets may be diverted to this other team. But I guess, quite frankly, they didn't come up with the goods during the last couple of years, and this is what you get.
The interesting scenario here is a signing on Tuesday was totally overshadowed by a signing on Thursday. And that, of course, was Stephen Richards going to FTR, and we really haven't talked about it today, and we're hoping to get Stephen on the show next week.
Yeah, that's right. I wonder if it's somehow linked. Stephen Richards, son of Jim Richards, there are links there to Gibson. Maybe Stephen Richards had the heads up that all this was coming, and in some aspects it was all linked to make sure that Stephen had a competitive ride for 2001 and he wasn't a victim of the clean-out at Kmart Racing. And unfortunately, Murphy seems to be one of the losers there without a definite drive for 2001 as yet.
And of course, I suppose if anybody wants to put a team together of Holden Commodores to race in the 2001 Shell Championship Series, as I say, Gibson Motorsport will be cleaning out all their Holden Commodore race car stocks, everything from the actual race cars to spare shells to engines, you name it, the whole box and dice is going out the door. So I'm sure that if somebody wanted to sort of upgrade themselves or get themselves to a higher level in the sport, that'd be the perfect way to go. I'm sure you probably find there's a number of people down with their checkbooks outside Gibson Motorsport ready to help inject some funds back into the team.
Still to come on the show tonight, we will speak to Simon Hodgson. You might ask who he is. He was the crew chief for Target Chip Ganassi for the last five years, four of them being kart championship years.
Inside Motorsport will return after these messages.
So your marriage is over. I'm sorry to hear about that. I guess it's been a pretty tough time for you lately. What's going to happen next? Are you filing for divorce?
Can you keep it semi-civil and make a joint application? Have you thought about getting a solicitor, or did you want to keep the costs down and do it yourself? There are so many questions, aren't there? My advice? Get an Aussie Legal Divorce Kit. Aussie Legal is Australia's online information and law firm referral service. Whether you're planning to apply to the family court on your own or seek the assistance of a lawyer, the information and checklist in the Aussie Legal Divorce Kit is invaluable, and it's written in everyday language by experienced lawyers. Call now. The Aussie Legal Divorce Kit is only $49.95 plus postage and handling, and includes an internet download of any other Aussie Legal family law kit. Here's how to order. Call this number now, 1-800-00-1194. Write the number down, 1-800-00-1194. Call now, 1-800-00-1194.
Sponsors of Triple S.
Hello everyone, H.G. Nelson here, and I'm an amnesty freak. Roy, what is amnesty?
Amnesty International, H.G., tremendous people. I would regard them as the global defender of human rights. And they're having this campaign, H.G., an international campaign that's called Take a Step to Stamp Out Torture.
Beauty.
Yes. And Australians can get involved. We can
How?
All get involved, H.G.
How?
By calling 1-300-300-920. Amnesty International. Think torture. Think of getting rid of it. 1-300-300-920.
Hi.
Good morning.
I need a clock that has more time.
More time?
My dad says he wishes he had more time with me.
Well, maybe if he brought his watch in, I could squeeze just a few extra moments between, say, 3 and 5.
And we could put the 3 where the 11 is so I could get out of school sooner.
Will that be all?
I think so.
No, it'd be no trouble to bag up some minutes.
Family.
Well, didn't you ever hear your dad say, when I've got a few minutes?
Yeah.
Isn't it about time?
Well, now you can give him some.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Inside Motorsport, from the racetrack to your radio.
Kart news and the story that Craig previewed, and Howard Revelle caught up with Simon Hodgson when he was in the Gold Coast for the kart race.
You've been at Target Chip Ganassi Racing for 5 seasons. This is my 5th year now.
You were involved in Formula 1. How does this stack up against what you were doing in Formula 1?
Pretty good series. I mean, it's completely different from the one. It's obviously the cars are very different, but one of the main things here is that the cars are so much alike. Basically, any driver on the grid can win a race. You know, it's a very competitive series, and I think that's what makes the racing exciting for the, you know, for the general public.
What made you get into leaving the UK?
Well, I actually worked for something called Team Lotus in Formula One, and I'd worked at that team for about 8 years, and every year you always thought the following year was going to be the season that, you know, the tide would turn, and eventually it didn't, and the company went bankrupt, so I moved and worked for a company called McLaren on their sports car project. I just realised that, you know, I didn't want to go back in Formula 1, redo things I'd already done, so I fancied a complete change in life, so I decided to go to America. Pretty difficult because of the visa and everything, but finally got my green card, and I haven't looked back. It's a good place to live, nice and cheap. Sure, a lot of people would like to live here in Australia, but there's not quite the motor racing going on here, unfortunately, but yeah, it's good. I like it.
Within the team, do you get much feedback from one to the other?
I think the drivers between themselves, they obviously all sit down in a common engineering room for their debrief, so Jimmy will often hear what Juan's doing and vice versa, and the engineers obviously look at all the data, so yeah, for sure, if one of them's struggling, they get a lot of information off the other guys. Me personally, I mean, obviously, if Jimmy's crew chief has a problem with his car, then I get to know about that. If we have a problem, you know, the chances are you're going to have the same problem on the other car, so between us, we sort of share all the information. I mean, it really is a team effort.
Leaving the US and coming over to Australia, what's involved in setting up to load the cars on planes?
Well, normally when we race in the States, everything goes on a semi, you know, a large truck. So all our spare parts are all housed inside that trailer. What we have to do when we come overseas like this, you obviously have weight restrictions and it's very expensive. So what we often do is we'll get different anvil cases. Most of these, like pack horses, they're divided up into different sections. So you'll have like the different pack horses. suspension components in one, wings in another, all the spares that we need, and obviously all those items have got to be recorded on a manifest, so it's pretty important for us to categorise items into different sections. But that also helps us because the next time we come away, we already have a ready-made list. We know what the weight was, so it's a chance for us to reorganise every time, save weight, cost the team less to come abroad. And, you know, over a period of time, it's just become much more organised and it works out really good for us.
Once you arrive at a track like Surface, do you have very much setting up?
Since the last race, obviously the cars have all gone back to the factory. They've been taken apart completely, fully rebuilt. What we tend to do is after each race, we take measurements of all the different adjustments for like the push rods that control the ride height, toe links that control the amount of toe in and toe out that you have on the car. So when the guys build the car again, they look at the setup sheet, they can see if there's any small differences. So by the time the car goes on the setup pad, it's pretty much already there. You know, we just need to do a turn here and a turn there, and that saves a lot of time. Like, for example, we got into town on Tuesday evening, came in Wednesday morning for about 3 hours, just squared the boxes away, made sure that everything had made it, made sure the cars were undamaged. Unpacked the cars, got them basically ready. So today we come in and we do fuel capacity on the car. The fuel tank's not allowed to be any more than 35 gallons. So we make sure we're legal there, make sure we're up to minimum weight with the car. Set the cars up and start them, make sure that, you know, we do full systems check. We're ready to run tomorrow morning, so...
Do you get much time to do any sightseeing?
I think most of the sightseeing the guys do is inside of the bar. And it's obviously a very friendly place here. I mean, Australians treat it very well. Seems that this is the one race where there's an awful lot of beautiful women as well, so I think that tends to take up quite a lot of time, so... Yeah, we definitely try and take in the sights. I'm not sure they're all the type that you think we were looking at.
Next year you go over to the UK and Europe. Now that you're already set up travelling to Australia and Brazil and so forth, no doubt be a fairly easy step for you.
Yeah, it should be a reasonable trip. Next year I believe that the race in Rockingham in England and the one in Germany, they're back-to-back races, so... That'll be a 2 week trip. We'll go like nearly a week before the race set up. I think it's scheduled to be a Saturday race, so if it does rain, we've still got Sunday to race on. And then it'll be off to Germany, so we're lucky in the respect of that they're both oval tracks, both similar tracks as well, so we shouldn't have to take too many different configurations of parts.
When you're travelling around the States, from an oval track to a road circuit or a street circuit, do you have to carry many different variety of wings and parts?
Well, the car we have this year, we changed from a Renault to a Lola chassis, and Lola seems to have an awful lot of different configurations of wheelbases, so they're governed by the type of wishbones that you run on the front of the car, so we take an awful lot of suspension with us. A lot of different bodywork items, because, I mean, things are so competitive, you can often look at another car and see they're running a different configuration. That car's quick, you might be struggling, so even though that's not probably the primary reason, it's certainly something you could try, you know, if you're struggling. So we tend to sort of take maybe a little more than we should, but best to err on the side of caution.
Do you have a preference as to what type of tracks you're on?
I personally, well, I'd have to say this year, we like ovals because we've been pretty quick on ovals, but I actually like these kind of circuits, you know, a street course, because you're normally often based downtown, you know, you stay where there's a lot going on. Plus, the racing seems pretty close. It's good fun, but... really, the main benefit of this kind of racing is it's so diverse. You have street courses, road courses, oval courses, and each one of them, you know, we've been lucky enough to win, you know, race in every different kind of track. So, for me, any race that you win is a good race.
How did the transition from the Honda to the Toyota go for you this year?
And I think when you go to something you've never done before, you always have some kind of problem. But really, I mean, we're lucky to work with a company that really is more of a partner than a supplier. So if we've had a problem with anything, they've gone straight ahead and been able to give us a lot of guidance if we've got various problems. If we see things that we think should be better or done differently, things from our past experience have always worked. I mean, Toyota are very happy to try and work with us. Same with Lowly, you know. The chassis is obviously different to Renault. Still a good package. So we've just been busy, you know. We've had the Indy project as well. We went to Indianapolis this year and ran that and won the race, luckily. Plus, we've moved to a new purpose-built factory. So we've had an awful lot to do this year. It's not just been a case of changing car and engine. Been lucky, we've had a lot of people working for us that have been there for a long time, so everybody sort of pitched in and we've had some good results, but we've also had a lot of bad luck. So.
Well, I guess you wouldn't see home too much considering you're on the road so often.
No, not really. I mean, for me, I've been in the States for 5 years, but for the past 4 years I've been busy trying to get the green card, so this is the first full year besides my first year that I've actually been able to travel to most of the races, so for me, yeah, I mean I haven't been back to the UK for 4 years, so I'm hoping to go back at the end of the year. But even when you're on the road in America, it's a lot of time away and not much time at home, and when you are at home you're sort of busy working 7 till 7 at night. That's what you need to do, so you need an understanding wife.
Okay, Simon, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Nice talking to you.
Howard Revell speaking with Simon Hodgson, the crew chief of the Target Chip Ganassi car, which was, of course, driven so eloquently by Juan Pablo Montoya. And I know, Colin, you were just commenting off air about Juan Pablo having a chat with a former Chip Ganassi teammate who bombed dramatically in Formula One.
Well, that's right. Alex Zanardi has apparently been giving his Colombian friend Juan Pablo Montoya all the drama about what it's going to be like to go back to Formula One. And apparently, you know, it's one of those things he's been saying, well, look, these are the things I did, and this is where it went wrong for me. These are things to be careful of. And so it's very interesting to see the fact that he's happy to share that experience, as bad as it was, with Montoya. And apparently the word is that Montoya has already gone out of his way to get himself in with the team mechanics, to talk to the media at the testing he's been doing for Formula One, and essentially...
Well, there's a mistake right there. He's talking to the media. Mm. That doesn't win you any brownie points in F1. You've got to ignore them explicitly.
Yeah. But anyway, as it is, Montoya has apparently taken a number of the things that Zanardi has said to heart, and particularly what he's doing is making sure he's turning up to the pit garage where he's been doing testing and so on early, and staying late, and talking to the various guys about what their roles are on the car, and generally mixing with the guys on the team. He's realising the fact that, of course, Ralf Schumacher has been there for a while and has got the guys around him. Some of the guys are probably a bit cheesed off because Jenson Button, who they're starting to cluster around, has gone off to Benetton. So he's got to ingratiate himself into the team. That's what he's been doing apparently quite well.
Yeah, it's interesting the extent of the culture gap there. I mean, it won't be so bad for these guys who did their early years of racing in Europe and various formulas there, but there was one other notable failure coming across from CART a few years ago, and that was Michael Andretti. He never really fit in, and he was never really comfortable living in Europe. And
well, he didn't even move to Europe. He didn't live in Europe. He lived in America and was commuting to all the testing and to all the races.
Yep, so really no surprise he didn't fit in at all. So, yes, it's good to see that Montoya is investing the time and effort now so that same mistake doesn't happen.
You mentioned Giancarlo Fisichella, and, of course, at Benetton he is now, he's got to be on the button because Button will drive past him without a shadow of a doubt.
Mm. Well, that's right, Jenson Button's there, and he's going to make a name for himself, no doubt, with Benetton. Benetton this year, of course, the first year with the new revolutionary 111 degree angle V10 engine with electromagnetic valves and the like. It's going to be very interesting to see how Benetton go with that new Renault engine. Apparently they've had some problems in testing, but it's also, as the testing has progressed, the engine has got more and more reliable, and knowing Renault, they're pouring mega francs or euros, whatever they are using over there in France currently, into that engine. But of course, one of the things we were discussing off air earlier in the show was who is going to be the wooden spooners of this year's Formula One Championship, because there's so many changes going on. We've got Arrows have now got what used to be the Peugeot engine with the Asia Tech or whatever they're calling it. Prost has now got a Super Tech. Williams have now got a new variant of the BMW engine. McLaren have got a new variant of the Mercedes. There's a lot of drivers changing and the like. So it's your story. Who is going to be the wooden spooners of this season?
Well, my pick is actually the Prost. I think the Prost will be the wooden spooners this year. And, you know, we all know that I have got a leaning towards our very good friends at Minardi. But I think Minardi can go forward more so than Prost can, which means then they're going to overtake Minardi. But I know Arrows is a name that comes to mind on the other side of this panel.
Well, actually, I think the Minardi could go one of two ways. One is they could take that step up to second last, or perhaps they won't even be there at the end of the year.
The people who I think are going to be interesting are Jordan. This year they've got a Honda engine factory deal. BAR have sort of proven the fact that the Honda engines are coming on strong. They're moving from what was a Honda Mugen engine, and for a 10th anniversary year, Eddie Jordan had a shocker last year, and I think again there's been some backside kicking and name taking going on in Jordan, and with the new Honda factory engine coming in, that's probably a bit of a fillip for the team, one less thing for Eddie to worry about, and they'll probably hopefully move themselves back up. Jaguar, the amount of money, the change. Actually, I think the thing that can actually mitigate against Jaguar this year is the number of changes they've had in terms of part of it in the driver line, but also in the technical and the management lineup. Once again, all change at the top of Jaguar. Where will they be at the end of 2001?
Well, Autosport.com this week reported that Malcolm Osler has said that the team is now immune to talk about Pollock and Dr. Adrian Reynard's bickering, not because it's not there and it's just a media beat-up, it's because it's always there and they're now used to it.
I think that BAR have probably got a few things they've got to get sorted out there, but it's going to be a very interesting year. I think we'll still see the two top guys being Ferrari and McLaren. I think Williams will come a little bit closer. Benetton, first year of the new Renault, I reckon we'll see some flashes of brilliance when the Renault engine sticks together, and maybe at tracks which might suit the horsepower and potential of the Renault. Prost, I don't know what they're going to do. Arrows, again, a question mark. And the rest, I think they'll just sort of float around the middle of the field. Potentially BR and Jordan will probably be the ones to sort of move up the greatest, I'd say, during the season.
At the pointy end of the field, how far is Ferrari going to fall?
I don't know. Maybe they'll continue with the impetus and momentum they got this year and stay up there. I don't think that they really want to have that thing of being champion one year and being nowhere the next.
It's called Collingwood syndrome. Champion one year, wooden spooners the next. And, 40 years till you win another one.
I'd say that Michael Schumacher will probably have a great deal to say to ensure that they don't do that.
Well, next week on the show, we'll be looking at, I've promised it every week for the last year, or so far this year especially, but we will be looking at Race Warrior, the Valvoline Cup 2020, and that's only now 19 years into the future. We might even be running it in 2020 by the time I get around to it. We'll also have all the news from the Queensland Swing of the World Series Sprint Cars, and we're hoping that we can get a hold of Stephen Richards. So, thank you, fellas, for once again joining us in the studio on Inside Motorsport this week.
Yes, we'll be back again next week. This is Colin Ford signing off.
And this is Peter Norton, who's a very happy Ford fan with recent developments.
And, of course, Craig Revell, hoping you can join me next Sunday morning for Sunday Morning Sport. And then, of course, join us all next week on Inside Motorsport.
Inside Motorsport is produced by Thunder Media in the studios of Triple SFM Canberra via Comrade Sat with the support of the Community Broadcasting Association of Australia.
over the towers, 20,000 light bulbs with a blue fitting, may be a fashion howler with terrible consequences.